Betches Media presents.
A lot of them aren't even pretending to be in charge.
Slow the testing down.
Remove him from office.
No justice, no peace.
He cast a vote that will make you proud.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
With all due respect, that's a bunch of malarkey.
Hello and welcome to the Betches Sup Podcast. I'm Amanda Duberman.
And I'm Sammy Fishbein.
And the Betches Sup Podcast is your daily rundown of all the craziest shit going down in the news, brought to you by your two funniest friends,
which is us. Today we're here with Representative Katie Porter. Congresswoman Porter represents California's 45th district, where she is the first Democrat elected to represent the district. And welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. Before we get started, we just wanted to note that as we're recording, it is Tuesday, July 21st. So if you're listening on Friday, which is when this comes out, we may have a little bit more information about the impact of upcoming stimulus legislation on education. So there may be updates to this conversation.
Yeah, and that is what we would love to talk to you about. So Congresswoman Porter, thank you so much for being here. As we've discussed, you're a mother of three, the only single mother in Congress. So you obviously get the implications of having kids at home for prolonged periods of time. I think the other day you recently shared a video of one of your kids literally running circles around you.
No, it's very real here. So when people ask me sort of, how do you think about these issues as a congressperson versus as a parent, that is just a dividing line that I have not found.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, how are you doing? How are you hanging in there?
I would say I'm hanging in there by a thin thread. I think that's true for a lot of people right now. I think moms always matter. And I will say that as a 46-year-old, that is true for me too. And as my mom has said when I've called her on a few occasions, Katie, we all have some bad days. And so that's sort of part of this getting through this pandemic. It's part of being a working parent in general, is giving yourself some permission to have some bad moments and some good moments.
Yeah, absolutely. So throughout the summer, what people have been talking about a lot in the past several weeks, I mean, I assume parents have been talking about it for months and months, but it's been more part of the mainstream conversation is education. But throughout the entire summer, you've been putting pressure on the administration to push for schools to reopen safely, but they need to provide guidance and resources. You wrote a letter with Senator Kamala Harris to Secretary Betsy DeVos and Secretary Alex Azar, demanding the federal government provide guidance to schools. You wrote, you have wasted months without apparently joining forces to conduct science-based research on the best ways to open reschools. And you asked the administration to rapidly offer guidance. That was 2.5 weeks ago. Have you seen anything since then that suggests they're taking the risk seriously?
Zero.
Yeah.
No response to that letter. None. And we're just ticking closer to when schools were supposed to have started. And I think one of the things that's most interesting about this is that, we started this pandemic in late January. It became very, very apparent in mid-March when we saw states like California shut down that we were going to need to take urgent action. As we watched what happened in other places across the country, in New York, New Jersey, where was the planning in April and May and June for this? So I will remember distinctly standing in DC in my congressional office, and there aren't a lot of parents who work as congressional staffers because the job is hard and late hours and the pay's not great. It's a tough job to be a congressional staffer, putting aside the fact that you have to deal with people like me. And saying to them in sort of mid-June, this is going to be a disaster. Like, I don't know what's going to happen with my kid's school. I still don't know. And they're like, oh, that's really interesting. And I was like, no, it's not interesting. Wow. It's a crisis. So the fact that everybody is sort of waking up to this from a public policy standpoint, I think your point about parents being worried about this from the get-go is absolutely true. And my kids go to year-round public school, or they were supposed to. So our back-to-school date was July 15th, and it came and went and had to be delayed because of the pandemic. And recently the district made little videos. What is hybrid learning? What is blended learning? I mean, I don't know. They sound the same to me. And so I watched these little videos and truthfully wept. Because they all just sounded like they have little cartoon characters of children being kept apart and wearing face shields. And it was just really overwhelming and difficult as a parent to have to make these choices without any real knowledge about what are best practices. How do I assess if my school district or my county board of education or my state is using the best practices? We don't know because Secretary DeVos and Secretary Azar have failed to provide any.
Can I ask if you have any ideas or insights about why they didn't do anything?
Well, I think with Secretary DeVos, I mean, her default mode, if you think about like a default setting, her default setting is to do nothing. So I think it's hard to say why she didn't do something about this because she just doesn't do stuff unless it's an opportunity to sort of advance for-profit colleges or for-profit charter schools. So she's in default mode of do nothing. Secretary Azar, I think, has, and the CDC certainly have been trying to meet some of the public health challenges that we face. But here's the reality. Most people in Congress don't have the kind of situation I have. And the number of times that I've said, this isn't going to work for me. I can't do this. And it's always, well, you know, Katie, you're just so unique. You're so special. Now, I may be the only single mom in Congress, but I want sure as hell I'm not the only single mom in the United States of America. And there's a lot of single parents, single working grandparents, and others who are facing the same kind of crisis. But the reality is Congress's priorities in part reflect who the people are who represent us. And for a lot of these people, this is their wife's problem. Their kids are grandkids, because if you look at congressional leadership, if you look at sort of who makes the policy, these are people who have a lot of experience, but they're in their 70s and 80s. This is not kind of daily pressure for them. And, you know, just yesterday I went for a walk. This was supposed to be my time alone. How do you keep yourself sane? I mean, I don't, but this was supposed to be my effort at doing that. And my daughter was on her scooter and she kept kind of scooting into my ankles. And I was like, Betsy, you just like go away. Like, I need you to scoot further in front of me. And she said, Mom, I don't care what you do. You're never going to be alone. Got it? And that is what, that's the relief that the school system provided, was yeah. that I was actually able to fully focus on work. But look, let's be clear. It's the reason you can focus is not just that the school's open. It's that the school is keeping your child safe. And that's not true for every parent in ordinary times. And I think what a lot of parents are feeling right now, worried about their kids' safety with COVID, we also have to remember is something that a lot of parents have to worry about each and every day in their school systems and in their communities.
Yeah, it seems like quite a cool irony that your daughter's name is Betsy. And you're directing letters to Betsy. Your world just revolves around Betsy lately, it sounds like.
Yeah, no, whenever I say anything that is pointing out some of Betsy DeVos's shortcomings. Yeah. My daughter's always like, don't talk that way about Betsy's.
That's really cute.
You know what's so interesting about how your colleagues think that your situation is unique? Your situation is not really at all unique. What's unique about it is that you seem to actually fulfill the purpose of what elected representatives are supposed to do, which is represent and reflect the constituency. I think what's actually remarkable about many of your colleagues is not their age or their insulation from like from childcare. It's the fact that they don't actually like necessarily reflect any sort of constituency because they've been like in office for so long. So
I think that's one of the great things about the 2018 class is that so many of us came from all different walks of life and bring a kind of different energy to how we should be operating as an institution to Congress. And I think there's some tension there around sort of, this is how we do it. And then a lot of us who arrived in 2018 saying, but why the hell would you do it that way? Right? And those are productive and positive conversations for creating a more functional Congress that hopefully the American people of all political parties, frankly, have more confidence in.
Yeah, when we talked to Senator Tammy Duckworth, her staff had noticed because her constituents, she also has really young children, came to her and said, like, I'm not getting a child credit for my baby that I had this year because to get money out the door, they weren't included in their taxes. Those babies didn't exist yet. And that's something that might not have come across anybody else's radar, but affects a huge number of people.
No, exactly. And I think it's two things. One is electing people who have these different experiences. And then two is people feeling more comfortable talking about their experiences and opening up a little bit more. So, I mean, I'll never forget when I was a candidate, someone saying to me, you know, I hope she really drives that minivan. And that's not just a joke, because we're going to put it in the commercials. And I was like, of course I drive a minivan. Like,
yeah.
What else would I drive, right? Like, how else can you transport three or four children without losing your mind? Like, yeah. The minivan is pretty much the only option available to me. And people have said to me things like, I often tape with my kitchen in the background. And they're like, your kitchen's so comforting. And I'm like, I'm glad it meets some deep, unfulfilled emotional need for you, but it's just my kitchen.
Right. Yeah.
I think people just are surprised when they're elected, when Congress people are like, they're normal people rather than like these Betsy DeVos-esque figures who are like completely just, I don't know, of some golden elite. But speaking of Betsy DeVos, can you tell us what alarms you more? The fact that Betsy DeVos refuses to disclose or even have any plans to open schools, or the fact that Kayleigh McEnany says that the administration won't let science get in the way of the opening?
Yeah, I mean, these are two really bad choices. I mean, I think one of the things about COVID-19, though, that I've thought a lot about recently with this school thing is I've been calling on it, you know, with Senator Harris's partnership. Kamala and I called on, you know, them to use science to create safe standards, is the lack of scientific research that we've been doing as a country and releasing anyway about COVID-19. And we're now several months into this, and we don't seem to be doing, having done the kinds of scientific studies to really understand some of these things. But, you know, I think you see this most clearly when you think about bars. You know, the choice to open up bars is a big factor in why we're not able to open up schools. And that reflects not only a priority choice, but also who has a lobby, who's pushing, how money being lost creates this. We can't let, you know, bar owners suffer, but children, they can just suffer. And some of the very last things to reopen in communities that did close were things like playgrounds. And I certainly think if you can figure out how to sanitize things like indoor dining at restaurants, you can figure out how to wipe down playground equipment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Since that's actually lower risk, they found.
Because it's outdoors, because it's, you know, not always occupied. There aren't servers there. It's families largely going as a family unit. And so I think we've seen here a combination of science, but also kind of political pressure that comes from organized lobbying. And, you know, I hate to say it, but Schoolhouse Rock notwithstanding, like, the kids' lobby just isn't what it could be in this country.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life. And of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
What do you make of the administration's claim that it won't fund schools that don't open their doors? How much federal funding actually does support schools, and who will taking it away hurt most?
So that is a terrible threat to be making to our school systems, to our teachers, to our parents, and frankly to businesses who benefit from having employees be able to show up for work because school systems are open and functioning. So we absolutely need to be giving more federal funding to schools right now, not threaten to take it away. Schools need funding to meet the challenges of the pandemic. And this is an administration, by the way, that has repeatedly trumpeted the importance of giving business resources to meet the pandemic. Restaurant owners have to have plexiglass shields. People have to put in, you know, sanitizer dispensers. where are schools supposed to get the money for doing all those things? We put $650 billion into the Paycheck Protection Program for small business. We put $500 billion into a Federal Reserve Treasury program for so-called Main Street, but really for Wall Street. And yet with schools, we're threatening to take funding away at the exact time we should be reassuring them that their funding is going to be stable and, in fact, increasing to let them meet the needs of this pandemic. So it's incredibly disappointing to hear this kind of, you know, we're willing to use children as sort of hostages in this kind of political battle.
Yeah, and the schools can't even, like, open their windows. So that should be a really nice situation come September. But just for our last question, last week, a number of studies emerged detailing the impact of the pandemic on working mothers who co-parent with a male. And they found that at-home schooling and childcare is still falling primarily on women, even though they're both physically present in the home. And women are dedicating about 4 to 5 times as much time to those things as before. How do you think that keeping kids home could actually exacerbate gender inequality?
Oh, I mean, in every second of every day, it will be exacerbating gender equality. And there's a great book on this. It's an old one, but a good one. It's actually on my bookshelf behind me. It's called The Second Shift by sociologist Arlie Hochschild. And one of the things that she highlights is even in households that believe both the man and the woman, for example, in a heterosexual household, say that they split the work, women still do 4 and 5 and 6 times more. So in essence, women work an extra shift of work each day. And you see sort of gender splits like this. I'll give you a great example. I'll take care of the outside of the house, says a man. You take care of the inside. So let me understand this. You get to take your shirt off and parade around and mow the front lawn while I'm in there every single night making dinner and facing an endless mound of laundry that is never done. That kind of like division isn't really equal division. And we've also seen, by the way, the economic impacts of this fall heavier. To the extent that there is, and we know there is, a gender pay gap, if one parent has to decide to leave the workforce, it's going to be the lower paid parent, which is often going to be the woman. And all of this is, we're already seeing women are losing jobs at nearly twice the rate of men, and that family, women who have children, single parents in particular, are 22% less likely to have a job right now as compared to two-parent families with children. So this, we're already seeing this as a huge labor market disruption for single parents and for families with children, young children, who are already at an economic disadvantage.
Right, right. You look at it and like women are more likely to be unemployed right now. They're also more likely to be running households. It's like everything compounds and hopefully that's all taken into consideration as they're moving forward with some additional help for people.
One of the things I really like to see is I'd love to see leaders like Jamie Dimon of the Business Roundtable, who's not just in his capacity as a bank CEO, but as kind of the CEO of the CEOs, step up and make childcare costs and schools reopening in the pandemic as part of what the business community needs to recover economically and to understand childcare as the economic issue that it really is. Women in the workforce are a huge part of our GDP growth. They're a huge part of how families are able to make ends meet. So we have to think about caring for children as a priority, and the business community needs to be leading on this point, putting pressure on the White House to deliver that state and local funding that's needed.
That's the irony, that it really would be to all of these men's advantages to actually, you know, create some equality through policy. But thank you so much, Congresswoman Porter. We feel so lucky to have someone like you representing, not maybe us in particular, but, you know, representing the people of America. And thank you so much for your hard work and your service. And we really wish you the best of luck with the all the demands that are on you.
Yeah, it's going to take a heck of a lot of luck to make it through today, much less through this pandemic. So I really appreciate that more than you could know. Thank you so much.
One day at a time.
Thank you. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sandy Fishbein.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast.
The Betches Sup podcast is produced by Sean Kilby and Amanda Duberman. Our podcast managers are Mike Coscarelli and Sean Kilby. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Artwork by Brittany Levine. Be sure to follow us at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send your emails to sup@betches.com.
Betches.